everybody. Welcome to Monday night on the Molloy program. Thanks for tuning in. Glad you could make it. We're going to talk about the nomination of Miss Kagan. What's her first name? Do you know? Elena? Elena Kagan? All right, we're going to be talking about that a little bit tonight. Real progressives are not very happy with this nomination. Anyway, we're going to talk about that. Also, we have Uncle Mike's Story Corner later tonight and a report from Prairie 2, as we usually do. I wanted to share this with you. You remember a couple of weeks ago, we read a two-part missive from Bob Alexander regarding e-smoking, electronic smoking, how to stop smoking. And Bob set up a website to handle anyone who wanted to call in or email in and make a request about what he was talking about. I got this today. I've gotten several of these, but I want to share this one with you. This is from Gabriella. She writes, "Dear Mike, my husband and I always listen to your show. We both ended up quitting smoking after we heard Bob Alexander's piece on e-cigarettes. I don't even have words to express how grateful I am to you. I wrote Bob and I posted a piece of the e-cig on the e-cig forum, and I wanted to tell you too. You changed our lives for the better, and I thank you. Regards, Gabriella, and then her last name." Well, that's nice. I don't take any credit for that. That was the manufacturer of that device, and of course, Bob Alexander for being so impressed with it that he wrote about it and sent it in to me. But that's nice. Good for you, Gabrielle. I'm glad to hear it. Georgia leads the country in bank failures. We've had 38 bank failures here in the Peach State since 2007. That's according to the FDIC. These failures in Georgia have generally been blamed on underregulation and overinvestment in real estate. But there's a bank down here, it's now shut, called the Integrity Bank. And that is a different kettle of fish altogether. What happened was this bank was shut down in August of 2008. And it was seen at the time as just another failed lender that had overvalued the real estate market and collapsed. But a federal indictment was unsealed this past Friday that accuses the two former vice presidents at the bank of selling fraudulent loans to a hotel developer in exchange for bribes. In other words, fraud, deceit, lying, theft, all of it. The two executives were charged with conspiracy, insider trading, and bank fraud, according to the indictment. The two executives are Doug Ballard and Joseph Foster. Ballard was also charged with bribery. The developer, Guy Mitchell, who received $80 million in loans, was charged with conspiracy and bribery. Now, so far, it's just another tale of capitalist, corporate, bank, lying, deceit, and thievery. But there's a catch to this story. The bank was founded in 2000 on Christian principles here in an Atlanta suburb. And Integrity used the motto, "In God we trust." The bank gave customers free Bibles, not toasters, free Bibles. And employees prayed together at meetings. One-time investors in the scam included a Georgia State Senator and former CNN host Lou Dobbs. Uh-huh. But in announcing the indictment, the United States Attorney for the North, for Northern Georgia, Sally Yates, said Mr. Ballard and Mr. Foster had not lived up to the bank's name or mission. In other words, they betrayed their Lord and Savior, Jesus Christus, betrayed him indeed. The U.S. attorney here said a number of banks have suffered from the plummeting real estate market, but this bank was robbed from the inside. Those indicted could not be reached for comment last Friday and will be arraigned at a later date. Mr. Mitchell pled not guilty at a federal courthouse in Atlanta. And, of course, a lawyer for all of these thugs said the clients had been law-abiding done nothing wrong. And the attorney said, quote, the collapse of the economy caused the bank failure, not the activity, end quote. Sure. Well, what's he going to say? I mean, a lawyer never wants to know the real truth. A criminal defense lawyer. Don't tell me the truth. Just tell me from your position. And it goes on and on and on. But the thing that the indictment charges, well, there's millions, tens of millions of dollars here that were stolen by these two Christians. And the name of the bank, get that, Integrity Bank, set up, it touted itself on Christian principles. We give away Bibles. We pray. We manage the bank on godly principles like the golden rule. What? Open your mic and talk, honey.
They should have been saying the prayer of Jabez.
The prayer of Jabez. The one about...
God, give me things.
Give me things,
please,
God.
Lord, I want things.
I want things.
And money.
I like new things.
New things make me happy.
Who said that? The betas?
All of them.
Oh, the alphas and the betas?
Anybody who took a soma.
Oh, they all said, I like new things.
New things make me happy.
New things make me happy.
That was the subliminal message that was being piped in
right
while they slept.
As you know now, the effort over the weekend by the clowns at British Petroleum to plug this gusher, this volcano of oil that's flowing into the Gulf of Mexico, and may just destroy life on Earth as we know it. That the attempt with that five-story or three-story dome has failed. The U.S. Coast Guard commandant said yesterday, quote, the next tactic is going to be something they call a junk shot. They're actually going to take a bunch of debris, shredded up tires, golf balls, and things like that, and under very high pressure, shoot it into the preventer itself to see if they can clog it up and stop the leak. That's a quote from the U.S. Coast Guard commandant. I guess the preventer is the last little piece between the oil underground and chaos in the water. The concept has been used before, but the commandant cautioned there were difficulties with this plan, and it is, his word, exotic. It's not clear when such a plan, developed by BP, by the way, might be put in place. So junk. They're going to fill it full of junk. Trash, debris, tires, golf balls, hubris, egotism. Fill it full of capitalism. Why don't we just gather up all the capitalists who caused this and shoot them and push their bodies down into this hole? That might do it. You talk about debris. You talk about junk. How about all the junk bonds that have been circulating by Goldman Sachs and the rest of these predatory bastards? We'll be right back. Stay with us. Oh, it's going to be nasty tonight. I'm Mike Malloy.
Yeah.
mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. The owner of the rig that exploded, Transocean, by the way, that's the world's biggest offshore driller. The explosion, as you remember, killed 11 people and is about to devour all life on Earth as we know it. This filthy capitalist country has made $270 million profit from insurance payouts for the disaster. Have you heard about that? The accounting gain is what they call it, arose because the $560 million insurance policy that Transocean took out on its Deepwater Horizon rig was greater than the value of the rig itself. So Transocean has already received a cash payment of $401 million, with the rest of the money due in the next few weeks. The windfall, revealed in a conference call with analysts, will more than cover the $200 million that Transocean expects to pay to survivors and their families. son of a bitch. You talk about disaster capitalism. These filthy pigs make money when they destroy the planet. Of course, that's true with every oil company and every coal company on Earth. Every time they mine or drill a teaspoon full of this carbon-producing garbage, they contribute to the death of the Earth, and they make tons of money. I wonder where the hell they're going to spend it when the planet finally collapses. Chuck wrote, Mike and Kathy, the Gulf oil spill, Iceland volcanoes, earthquakes everywhere. It's as if all the little creepy goblins and gargoyles that normally reside deep underground in their own realm are now coming to the surface by the millions. Their diet is fear and anger and violence. They skim off the cream of those lower emotions, then toss out the empty container, that's you and me, when it's finished. They're having a field day now, feasting on the fear and anger and fighting of their human hosts. It is a Republican wet dream. Sound the retreat. I'm going to the mountains. Chuck. I hear you, Chuck. We're probably not far behind. Oy. Oh, yeah. And since the explosion on April 20th, what is that, 3 weeks ago? The Obama administration has granted oil and gas companies at least 27 waivers, exemptions, from doing in-depth environmental studies of oil exploration and production in the Gulf of Mexico. This is according to McClatchy newspapers. The waivers were granted despite Obama's vow that his administration would launch a, quote, relentless response effort, end quote, to stop this eruption and prevent more damage to the Gulf. One of these leases was dated Friday, just past, the day after Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said he was temporarily halting offshore drilling. The exemptions, known as categorical exclusions, were granted by the Interior Department's Minerals Management Service, MMS, you know, those guys, and included waiving detailed environmental studies for a BP exploration plan to be conducted at a depth of more than 4,000 feet, and another one, an Anadarko Petroleum Corporation exploration plan to begin puncturing the Earth's crust at more than 9,000 feet. The conservation director with the Center for Biological Diversity said, quote, is there a moratorium on offshore drilling or not? It's incredible. Do you feel like we're being misled? Do you feel like somebody in the Obama administration, maybe right up to the president himself, is lying through their teeth? 27 exemptions from doing in-depth environmental studies of oil exploration and production in the Gulf of Mexico. Just in the Gulf of Mexico. 27 exemptions since the explosion and the volcanic eruption. Mr. President. Mr. President. Oh, well. Okay, what else we have here? Like I said last week, it's difficult for me to get too far into discussing what's going on in the Gulf because I tend to want to open a vein, not necessarily mine, but somebody's. Oh, also, what I said last week, and I've said it many times, about the only thing left that Americans can do is just to stop doing everything to get the attention of the corporate capitalist bastards who are eating our planet. A couple of people misunderstood what I meant, and I want to clarify that when we come back after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Susan in Sequim, Washington sent this to me. The subject line says dropping out of capitalism. Mike, there's something you said Friday that I've been thinking about on and off all weekend. You've said it before too, so maybe that's why it keeps nagging me. Anyway, you said that we could beat the corporatists by simply all dropping out. With passive resistance. We could all refuse to play, simply stop using their system, stop buying their crap or playing in their game. If enough people did it, you maintained that they'd be out of business and their rule would end. Well, this sounded really good to me and I thought it could work. We should all do that. And then I felt really guilty because I'm very much locked into the system. So then I thought, how the hell do I get out? And this is the real problem. How can those of us who realize that capitalism is destroying the world do as you suggest and drop out? It sounds good on the surface, but how can it work in practice? The standard thing to say at this point is that we're all addicted to all our conveniences and all our shopaholic lifestyle. But it's more than that. Dropping out would require far more than giving up cable TV, Mickey D's, and Diet Coke. Everything, even our life's essentials, is locked into the current system. How does one unwind it? Think of an average family with kids who want to get off the grid, as it were. It's all well and good to say, I won't buy petroleum, but many people won't be able to get to work. How do you get the kids to school? The school buses are all owned by huge corporations nowadays. And what about the parents' jobs? Lots of them are for the very corporations that are killing us, but people can't just walk away from them. They'd starve, and so would their kids. People who live in the city can't just walk off to the woods and live off the land, even assuming they knew how. How could a family even get clothing and shoes? The problem with dropping out goes way beyond creature comforts. It's survival. Many of the things we would need to drop out of are actually vital necessities. What are you going to do with what little money you have if you can't put it in a bank? How are you going to heat your home without buying oil or gas or coal or electricity? If you don't want to support the banks, you can't have a mortgage. You can't put a tent up in the park. You'd get kicked out, so you have to rent. And where do you get the money to pay the rent in the first place if you've dropped out anyway? It goes on and on. When I think about it, every facet of our culture, every fiber in the fabric of our society is woven together with this horrible, choking capitalist system. Most retirement plans are tied into the current investment system as well, so waiting for retirement won't get anyone off. So, how do we hurt them? How do we bring these pigs to their knees? Can anyone come up with a workable plan that would actually start a movement to drop out? It sure as hell has to be a plan that doesn't include our politicians, because we all know they have all totally sold out to the highest bidder. So please, Mike, the next time you tell us that we really could drop out if we weren't culturally dysfunctional or lazy or too disorganized to get it together, could you please be so kind as to tell us the meat and bones of the how? Thanks for making me think. Susan, well, just to clarify, I've not suggested that we all get off the grid. That's a good idea, and I know the individuals have done it. What I was talking about was taking one day or one week to stop everything. Just nobody go to work, nobody go to school, nobody go to the store, nobody do anything. Just stay home and read or talk or get together in public parks and hold discussions about what are we going to do to save our own lives. As a matter of fact, I think I even referenced Gandhi and Dr. King. Now, so that's what I was talking about. As far as living off the grid, so to speak, yeah, it can be done. A starting point, it's already started. There are worker and business co-ops that have started, and I'm drawing a blank on their names. I know somebody will email me, that have started in Europe. And these are co-ops that, in the first place, I think some of the more advanced ones, are using solar energy, which is free. You just have to know how to install solar panels to heat the water in your house, if you have a house. People get together and build houses for each other. That's an old Amish idea. You become self-sufficient. Now, if you want to know how to live off the grid, take a look at the Amish. I'm not saying everybody has to become a farmer, which is pretty much what the Amish do. In addition to making things, they make furniture, they make harnesses and tack for the horses, they make buggies, they make art, what the Amish consider art. There are ways to do it. There are ways to live off the grid. I'd be willing to bet that there are tens of thousands of people in the United States right now who are quietly living, quote, off the grid. Susan writes, how are you going to heat your home without buying oil or gas or coal or electricity? Well, using solar panels, you can generate your own energy, and then you can use it any way you want to. Now, can everybody do this? I don't know. I'm talking in theory, and I think Susan is too. Susan's asking questions that reflect this theory. But I think if we sat down, we're not stupid. We really are not. Not all of us. About 60% of us are dumber than a pile of dog droppings. But the rest of us, the 30 or 40% of us who are not Republicans, who are not conservatives, who don't think owning a gun is what Jesus wants everyone to do. In other words, those of us who still maintain some ability to think and to think in a collective sense. You know, what's the best thing for the planet? What's the best thing for my community? What's the best thing for my village, my tribe, whatever the hell you want to call it? Those of us who can still think like that can, I maintain, come up with solutions. We can. I know this program a lot. It sounds like so many times, like I'm throwing my hands up in the air and run screaming into the woods. And I'm not. If I were to do that, I would be betraying my almost 6-year-old daughter. I would be betraying my grandchildren, and I'm not about to do that. As much as we talk about this stuff here on this program, yes, Kathy and I still drive, taking Molly to school. We still buy food at a supermarket that we know is produced by big corporations. Not all of it. We buy as much as we can from farmers markets, these little farmers markets. We try to maintain a low profile where it considers our carbon footprint, so-called. But it's not enough. It's just not enough to do that. Every time I get on a plane to fly to some kind of a conference in Seattle or Minneapolis or San Francisco, I know that I'm contributing to this disaster. So it's not that I'm suggesting that everybody should just stop everything permanently. You're right. The upheaval, the disorientation that would occur, there would be no benefit to it. But if we begin at some point, and Susan and I may not be alive to see the fulfillment of this because it will take time, but to begin learning how to live in a sustainable environment. You know, they talk about energy, and again, I go back to what I was taught, I think, in ninth grade science class, general science, that, or was it physics, that we have hanging up in the sky, so to speak, 93 million miles away from us, which is just, you know, a couple of inches, or not even that, in terms of interplanetary distances, we have this huge, more or less, thermonuclear reactor that generates...
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. All right, let's get this out of the way. Stan is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hi, Stan.
How you doing, Mike?
Pretty good.
So, I'm trying to figure out what you are, actually.
Why? What in your life compels you to figure out what I am? Do you know what you are?
Oh, absolutely.
What are you?
I'm a man.
Well, you don't...
Politically, I'm a conservative, but I'm trying to figure out where you actually fall.
Why do you care? Why do you care, Stan, what I am? Is your life so empty that you have to try to figure me out?
Absolutely, Mike. My life's so empty. I just...
Well, don't you... I'll tell you what. Why don't you do something...
Like this.
Why don't you do something to make your life have a little bit more meaning? To sit there in the darkness in Minneapolis, look, you got theaters there, you got bars, you got restaurants. I don't know if you date anybody, but you could take your boyfriend or your girlfriend and go someplace. But you have to sit there, and I appreciate the fact you listen to the program, but you have to sit there and worry your little brain about what I am? Come on, Stan, give it a rest. For heaven's sake, get a life. What are you, Mike? Stan, I am your worst enemy. I am somebody who believes in the truth, whose brain has not been scrubbed. Like yours, Stan! Can you imagine, would you do that? Would you sit, Kathy, would you sit around and wait to call a radio program to ask, you know, where are you? What are you?
Well, I did call your show once or twice before we met.
Well, that was because you... Do you think this guy wanted from me the same thing you wanted from me?
You never know.
All those years ago?
You never know. Huh? You know, and a couple of times I had to wonder. I thought maybe you were pitching for the other team. Because,
well, at one time I did.
You used to talk about your partner. Well, my partner and I went to a Braves game. My partner and I were at dinner the other night, and I thought, okay, well, he's one of these
switch
of these
hitters.
Men, exactly, who was married and has a couple of kids.
And decided he would go to the other side.
You know, unlucky for me, but lucky for some man out there like our last caller who sits in the dark in Minnesota
and wonders,
What is Mike Malloy?
Is he a Mason? Is he...
An alien?
Is he an alien? Is he gay? Is he not gay? Is he? Ooh. Get a life, Stan! Now, where were we before? The guy called in. I had to take his call. But now it's finished. Stan, do me a favor. Don't ever call again, all right? Because you're boring and you're kind of a dumbass. So just, this is from NPR, their website, npr.org. And this is really an incredible story. Hours after they had been rescued, the workers who survived the explosion, on the oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico were asked to sign form letters about what they had seen and whether they had been injured. Lawyers for the oil rig's owner, it's owned by Transocean. That's the rig's owner. The drilling was done by BP. Anyway, the lawyers for Transocean requested that workers who had survived the blast sign the form in the wake of that blowout on the Deepwater Horizon. This was hours before the workers had been allowed to see their families. Now some of those survivors say they were coerced and that the forms are being used against them as they file lawsuits seeking compensation for psychiatric problems and other injuries from the blast. A Houston attorney who represents some of the survivors, a guy named Stephen Gordon, said, quote, the form that that BP made them sign, Transocean made them sign, had, quote, I was here when it happened. I didn't see anything on it. Or I saw this and I was or was not hurt. A pre-printed form letter was handed to the workers, and they were asked to fill in the date, name, address, where he was at the time of the evacuation. And then there were two paragraphs at the end. One said, I was not a witness to the incident requiring the evacuation and have no firsthand or personal knowledge regarding the incident. The second paragraph says, I was not injured as a result of the incident or evacuation. Now, the men were asked if they agreed to initial those statements. Documents show those initials are now being used against the survivors as they file lawsuits seeking payment for emotional distress and other claims. Attorney Gordon says, quote, when we were hired by one of the survivors, we gave notice to Transocean's lawyers, and the immediate response was, wow, we're surprised. Here's a statement that says your guy wasn't hurt. Gordon and his partner, Attorney Kurt Arnold, each have one client who has received letters from Transocean in the past few days. Attorney Arnold says asking the men to sign those forms was coercive. He said the request came more than 24 hours after the rescue, after the men had seen 11 of their friends die in the explosion and chaos of that night, and after they had run to lifeboats to try to save their own lives. Arnold's clients aren't speaking publicly, but have described the scene to him. He says, quote, it's extremely gruesome. I mean, one of the guys told me that as he's running out on the platform, there's guys burning and some of the guys missing limbs. It was like a war zone. Anyway, the two attorneys say the survivors were kept on the water in boats or on another rig for 15 hours or more. When they did get to shore, they were zipped into private buses. There was security there. There were no press, no lawyers allowed, nothing, no family members. They drove them to this hotel. They escorted them into the back of the hotel, once again under escort, and tried to get them to force them to sign these agreements. This is how Transocean and BP and the rest of these predatory capitalist bastards work. Huh? We'll be right back. It is 7 past the hour. Duncan in Redding, California, sent me an email. Mike, heard Bobby Kennedy and Papantonio talking about this other rig in the Gulf of Mexico. Can you imagine what would happen if this one has a problem? And Duncan sends me a link to the Houston Chronicle. And it says that BP is facing an ongoing federal probe over concerns that the oil giant illegally cut safety corners in rushing completion of its massive Atlantis offshore production platform, described by BP as the deepest oil production platform in the world. Atlantis. The allegations have been raised by 19 members of Congress, a Houston-based safety expert and a whistleblowing contractor, and a Washington, D.C. nonprofit organization. BP began operations at the Atlantis platform in October 2007 at a site about 124 miles offshore in 7,000 feet of water. The current disaster is in 7,000 feet of water, and expanded production last year, according to government records in BP's annual report. The allegations against the company suggest the company rushed into production by skipping or skimping required engineering inspections, putting profits ahead of the need to protect workers from accidents and the environment. No! Profits ahead of worker safety and protecting the environment? Oh, my God! Somebody, quick, dial 911. This is the first time that's ever happened. Or not. And also it says they did not do the required due diligence about potentially catastrophic oil spills, according to allegations sent to regulators. Oh, my God. Darren Bodo, B-E-A-U-D-O, Bodo, a BP spokesman, insists the company designed and built the platform to, quote, meet global industry engineering standards, like the one at your other place there, Darren, including review and approval of project design and construction procedures by professional engineers. We've done it all, and BP has found no evidence to substantiate the organization's claims with respect to Atlantis. You know, I'm sure they probably could have said that about the current disaster. Right? My God. Yeah, this only happens once out of every how many events? Yeah, sure. Okay. So anyway, the in a February 24th letter, way back in February, 19 U.S. representatives from Arizona, New Jersey, Mississippi, Florida, California, Massachusetts, and other states all requested a formal investigation of BP's Atlantis platform, an investigation by the Minerals Management Service, MMS. The letter says the MMS has an obligation and a duty to ensure that natural resource extraction from public lands and the outer continental shelf is done with the utmost concern for the environment and the health and safety of workers and the public. It is critical we get this right. Yo, okay. Well, you hear, members of Congress, what BP says. A spokesman for BP insists that the company designed and built the platform to meet. See, this is the weasel part. Here are the weasel words. We built it and designed it to meet global industry engineering standards, including review and approval of project design and construction procedures, just like we did with the one that's destroying the Gulf of Mexico now. And then we had 61 senators vote last night to not restrict the predators on Wall Street. Ever feel like you, thanks, Duncan, for the email. Man. A lot Dr. Stephen Jonas sends out an email every once in a while. Hello, everyone. Well, when I wrote this one last Monday, a lot of stuff in it was still fairly fresh. However, our side has been at this one with a vengeance, thank goodness. So now a lot of it is not fresh. However, it's a good summary of some of the juicier bits about BP and Halliburton. So if you've not had the time to keep up, consider this one one-stop shopping. Oh, yes, one item not in it is that while we were originally told that the oil in this case was rather lighter than that spewed forth from the Exxon Valdez, yesterday it was reported that large chunks of it are sinking to the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. There it is being ingested by the bacteria that are ingested by the plankton, that are ingested by the shellfish, and the little swimming fish, which are, well, you get it, so on and so on, up the food chain. Which foods that we eat will become totally inedible, if not poisonous? The Gulf presently supplies about one-third of the seafood consumed in the U.S. Bye-bye livelihoods, bye-bye family businesses for generations. Hello, skyrocketing seafood costs. Ah, yes. Small government. Deregulation. Ain't they just great? Ah! Drill, baby, drill! You know what happened? The North Koreans sent a submarine. It was a special submarine that they sent to the Gulf of Mexico to blow it up. And you know what else? Barack Obama knew about it. He did. He was in on the plot because Barack Obama is trying to get all the offshore drilling stopped so that his Muslim friends over in the Middle East can continue to sell us oil and make billions. So Barack Obama sent his emissary to North Korea. And they worked out a deal where the North Koreans, using American technology, got in a submarine and came over to the Gulf of Mexico and shot us a torpedo. That's what happened. That's what happened. And now, now, I won't be able to buy shrimp anymore. Hi, I'm Glenn Beck. Have I killed myself yet? I can't tell. I don't know if I've committed suicide. Does somebody help me? Do I have a producer in here? Am I alive? Hello? Am I still alive? Oh, that's just my finger. Brian in San Diego wants me to pass this word about the leak. Mike, the 5,000 barrel per day number arrived at by NOAA, BP, Coast Guard, etc. absolutely has to be utter bullcrap. Here's a simple calculation that exposes the official estimate as so much toxic sludge. I was wondering what the output per second would be of the gusher. 210,000 gallons per day divided by 86,400 seconds per day equals 2.43 gallons per second. Divide that number by 3 leaks, and it's an average of 0.81 gallons per second. No one would argue that putting that much oil per day in the ocean is a good thing. However, that number is a placeholder number arrived at so our government and BP can cover each other's oily behinds. Just for fun, I looked up a pumping system that weighs 26 pounds and has an output through a 4-inch pipe of 10 gallons per second. 10 gallons per second, not 0.81 gallons per second. I don't suppose that a high-pressure oil and gas deposit might muster more than that much pressure through a much larger pipe? Brian in San Diego. Well, I think I understand what you're saying, Brian. Yeah, they lied to us. Yeah, they continue to lie to us, but that's what capitalism does.
Blue, I know. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Email here from a listener in Hawaii. Kauai John. I hope I'm saying that right. Regarding that vote, the 61 senators who voted no, we don't want to regulate the banks or break them up, and the 31 that voted yes, Kauai John says, Mike, I called Senators Akaka and Inouye, the two Hawaiian senators, because they both voted against the amendment to break up the banks. Inouye's office called back saying he still supports breaking up the banks and that on next Tuesday there will be another bill that is supposed to do the same thing and that the bill they voted no on had too many loopholes. We'll have to see. Kauai John. Okay. Thanks, John. I appreciate that. We'll see what happens. And this is from Sanchez to Senora Malloy. Welcome to the corporate states of America. You were forced to sign away your rights for the betterment of the corporation, those workers. And the democratically selected president of the corporate states of America wines and dines the banksters and fat cats in the White House while the homeless and undereducated are left to fend for scraps in the filthy streets. My friends are telling me give the Democrats one more chance. After hearing the story about the sellout Democratic Party senators who gave the banksters another free pass, I fret to see what our supposed benevolent Democrats would do to the sheeple next. Why hasn't the Glass-Steagall Act been reinstated? Why aren't these senatorial charlatans called out on the carpet? The only solution left is outright revolution. Unfortunately, most of the sheeple will never understand the true meaning of revolution. The corporate media will see to that. Yeah, it's getting frustrating, isn't it? And then, Greg, you want to take some calls? Anybody want to call in? If you folks want to call in, 877-996-2556. Greg in Florida, who's lengthy, or not lengthy, but he's written in quite a bit about this disaster in the Gulf. Greg writes, yesterday I wrote in and mentioned contradictory reports in the media about efforts to cap this the gusher. That led me to do a more thorough analysis of other reports, and I found this from Florida State University. Dr. Ian McDonald at FSU produced a spill size estimate based on aerial overflights taken on April 28th, over a week ago. The bottom line, on April 28th, Professor McDonald estimates that there was a total of 8.9 million gallons floating on the surface of the Gulf. Based on his flowcharts, that means that on May 1st, the leak surpassed the quantity of oil that the Exxon Valdez spilled, and that there are about 18.8 million gallons of oil floating on the Gulf of Mexico today. Keep in mind, it takes only 1 quart of oil to poison 250,000 gallons of seawater for all marine life. And then Greg, that's from University from Florida State. And then Greg writes, I've come to the conclusion that the media, BP, and the government are lying their asses off about the extent of this spill. And then he lists an article. I posted a video in this article taken on May 4th of a flyover conducted by an environmental organization in Alabama. My lying eyes tell me it's way worse than anyone has been told. Dr. McDonald probably would agree. When this hits the beaches, people are going to be very angry. I just hope the anger will be directed at the corporations, the economic policies, and the lack of regulations that are truly responsible for this disaster. And the anger becomes a productive catalyst for change. Well, I do too, Greg, but, but nothing. I do too. I hope that's how it will work out. Jack is in Wilmington, Delaware, listening on Sirius. Hello, Jack.
Hi, how you doing this evening, sir?
I'm all right.
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm a truck driver by profession, but back in 07, I took some time off, and I worked offshore out of the New Orleans area. I've shipped out of Venice before. I've never been on the rig that exploded, but I'm pretty sure I've been by it. And the figure that they're given of like 5,000 barrels a day is probably pretty accurate for the simple fact. I mean, I'm...
Well, why then has BP now said that it's much, much more than that?
I'll be honest with you, I haven't listened to a lot of news in the last couple of days.
Okay, well, things have changed dramatically, Jack. Even BP admits now that the gush coming out of that crack in the floor of the ocean is, I don't know what the latest figure is, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 gallons per, I don't know. It's that's kind of beside the point, though, Jack. The point is the Gulf of Mexico is being destroyed, and it's being destroyed because for 8 years during the Bush administration, for 8 years during the Clinton administration, for 4 years during Pappy Bush, and for 8 years during Ronald Reagan, there was a concentrated effort to destroy the United States and replace it with the United Corporate States of America.
Watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. A couple of quick emails here and then we'll go to your calls. This is from Tom. Both of these are kind of disjointed, but I thought I'd share them with you. Tom writes, all these things happen at the same time. Oil spills, stock market volatilities, Congress rubber stamping big bank conglomerates by refusing to break them up. Icelandic volcano perking up again. Times Square terror suspect scare. Workers and students rebelling against IMF-imposed austerities in Greece, etc., etc., etc. Tom in Minnesota. Okay. And then James in Minnesota writes, the vision that awoke me from a dream. Do-do-do-do-do. He writes, I felt ill since the day the rig blew. Somehow the gestalt of this crime in the water bypasses the deadening tools I am poorly equipped with. The deadening tools, like television, I'm poorly equipped with, and dreamed of my skin being pierced by proboscis of a Minnesota-type mosquito swamp attack. Then in the midst of this horrible blood-sucking alien nurturing on me, there appeared a superimposition in the landscape of my body, the looming presence of drill rigs sucking through long proboscis on the skin of the ocean, and I was suddenly nauseated beyond description, like torture, that the huge mosquito had been slapped, and now there my earth lay, bleeding, and I now could only feel that I could no longer do anything about my body illness, laying down to die in my blood. The visage of the huge mosquito comes over me every time I hear more and more. Yikes. James, easy. It's only the earth that's being destroyed. Man. Rick is in Oakland, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Rick.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
I have a comeback to the, you had the, what I like to call Joe the limo driver.
Oh, yeah.
I came from a liberal family and tried to start a business, and it didn't take.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we spoke a couple months ago, and I was talking about when you have to go passive because, you know, circumstances or,
yeah,
you know, not knowing what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the active part of it was I spent 9 years trying to start my business.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, let's call him Joe the
The limo driver
limo
guy?
Owner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see if I can pick this apart.
Now, wait. Just wait a minute. Just so the audience knows, the guy that called in the other night said he had 9 limos and capitalism was wonderful for him and yada, yada, yada. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks. Mm-hmm. First of all, he probably doesn't own any of the limos. A bank owns them.
Mm-hmm.
Second, he's probably, what, 6 or 7 employees. So he's doing a portion of the work, so they do the other portion. And thirdly, he doesn't really earn that income. If he says, I make $500,000 a year. No, he doesn't. He's probably quoting the figures before he does his payroll.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? So I've heard these guys call in. This is a Joe the plumber.
Yeah.
You know, in disguise.
What kind of what kind of business did you try to start?
I've been a software engineer, got disabled.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mechanical computer, you know, like an 1800 style mechanical computer for teaching.
I can't get an image of that.
Well, it's instead of having these little micro miniature transistors,
right.
You have objects that are about the size of a Band-Aid box. So, you know, high school kids or whatever can plug these things in. It makes a giant computer the size of a refrigerator. And they can plug things in and get into the innards of the workings of the computer without using electronics. It's all mechanical.
And are you manufacturing these or?
No, I had to quit because of my health, and I went 9 years with it. Got ripped off by my patent attorney. Got nowhere with the patent office. Got nowhere with the Small Business Administration. I don't have very good business skills. You know, I'm a computer,
mm-hmm.
pretty much, you know, software.
Right.
You know, I took the lawyer to the state bar. They did. And things like that with my complaints, got nowhere. It's a kind of a technology you need patent protection.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of relates to the small business. Now, one thing I could say to this guy, this driver guy, to his, on his side, I could say, you know, this kind of person needs, you know, is focused on money,
mm-hmm.
and probably very stressed out. But still, he's going to be the same guy that says, you know, he's going to say that conservatives start the businesses and the liberals suck off of them, or, you know, the liberals are taking his money. And, you know, it's just that I can smell him coming a mile away.
Yeah, well, I had several listeners, Rick, who also could and sent me some very interesting emails about that. Hey, Rick, thanks. Stay in touch. It would be great to see your business arrangement get worked out. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it. Clay is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Clay.
Hey, Mike. Just wanted to say good conversation on what's happening down in the Gulf. I think what's happening down there is disgusting. I mean, you just look at what we've let multinational corporations do to our country, poison our environment. This is one of the biggest environmental disasters ever in history that man can even think of. And the lack of attention given it is despicable. I think that's tied with a lot of other things going on now as well. As you were saying earlier, the bankster bailouts that have been happening since the fall of 2008 and which continued through 2009. And I think the answer to all these problems that are snowballing right now, whether it be the environmental disaster in the Gulf and the harm that that's going to do, the irreparable harm to our economy, what's going on in Nashville, the flooding there, other things as well, things happening in Greece, is we need a fundamental change in government. We need to get back to meeting our neighbor down the street, taking back our precincts and whatever political organization you can, and changing the way we live and changing the direction our country's going in. I think that everything is connected. And I appreciate what you're reading earlier. That really put it together. But I think we need a fundamental change. And I think one way we can do that is pulling the plug on the funding of some parts of the federal government. We've got to put our foot down, say no more military funding, whether that's through state sovereignty or however you want to do it. You know, that's great, but it's time that people start standing up, because this is, you know, you can't take anymore. Thanks, Mike.
All right. I appreciate what you had to say, Clay. I don't disagree with any of it except the state sovereignty thing. I think that's getting way too much attention. It's kind of, no offense, Clay, I'm not saying this about you, but I think that idea is ridiculous. We have a 48 states, contiguous states here on this landmass, and it's almost like the craziness of having however many countries there are, 200 countries on Earth. That's crazy. That's crazy. When you think, you know, this is where I reveal my inclination towards one world government. You know, to say that we are all different, it depends on how you mean that. Genetically, we're all the same. There is no difference. The differences, if they do exist, between the five or six primary races on this planet is infinitesimal, if it exists at all. To continue, I don't know, you know, the human race to continue to act as though there is a place called, for example, Japan. To act as though there's a place called Russia or England or Canada or the United States or Texas or whatever is madness. I mean, where does that exist? Where do those delineations really exist? Except in the minds of the people who declared, well, we're going to put a border here and we're going to call this Iraq. We're going to put a border here. We're going to call this Mississippi. I mean, that's it. I can't accept that. The answer to the problems on planet Earth is to start acting as though we're one people. And that means one world government. This is the right wing thing that drives these right wingers just out of their goddamn minds. It makes them all see spiders and bugs climbing up the walls. I mean, it makes them insane, right? One world. Oh my God, he's talking about one world government. Ah, the bats. The bats are coming. The manta rays. Oh Jesus, what's around my feet? We'll be back.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Yeah, I think one world government makes a lot of sense. I really do. No, I don't have a blueprint. But these political divisions, whether they are, you know, Germany versus the United States, or Mississippi versus Iceland, or Alabama versus the United States, you know, it's madness. It makes absolutely no sense, as far as I'm concerned, whatsoever. If you look at it in more or less the Carl Sagan kind of way, this is, you know, this little blue dot that we're on, this spaceship Earth, I mean, can you imagine if we were on a jetliner, a huge jetliner, and, you know, these people over here represented one faction that decided what was going to happen to the jetliner, and these people over here decided another faction, and these people up here said, look, we want to punch holes in the side of the jetliner, and these people back here said, no, you can't do that. If you do it, the air will rush out. And these people over here said, well, no, the air won't rush out. God will protect us. And these people over here said, no, not only will the air rush out, but cosmic rays will rush in. So they said, okay, well, you see what I'm saying? I'm sorry, I don't mean to get all simplistic on you, but this whole subdivided human race, it's madness. It really is. I'm not talking about sameness where it concerns cultures. I mean, here in the United States, right? We're one nation, or we're supposed to be. That's not going to be around too much longer anyway. But we're one nation. We go to Maine, for example, because the people in Maine have certain cultural aspects to the way they live that we find interesting and appealing. So we go to Maine and we go to their rocky coastline, and we watch the lobstermen, and we, you know, maybe climb a mountain or two. And then we decide, hey, let's go to New Mexico. And we go to New Mexico because of the beautiful deserts, and the people there do things differently. And the artisans in New Mexico and Santa Fe are unique in the United States. And they say, oh, well, let's go to New York City. The point I'm trying to make is that political sameness or political unity does not necessarily translate as everybody being the same. To continue the path we're on, I think, though, all you have to do is look at history. Who wants to look at history? But it seems to me, if you look at history, I don't think there's ever been a time in the history of the human race, if I'm wrong, correct me, when the peoples of the planet were not involved in various places of wars, trying to murder each other. Just trying to murder each other, either for religious reasons or for political reasons or for reasons of resources, resource accumulation, or because we like their women and want to get them, or they like our men and want to get them, or it's crazy. So not only am I a democratic socialist, but I'm also a one-worlder. All right, you little trolls over at redstate.com and Free Republic and all these other crazy Nazi, put that down. He's a wrong one-worlder. Oh, no. Oh, yes. I mean, somebody sent me an email. Give me a counter-argument. Give me a good counter-argument. Now, remember, I'm talking about a political sameness. A kind of, we're all in this together kind of thing. You know, the kumbaya thing that the right-wingers say. The right-wingers and the corporatists and right-wingers all over the planet, corporatists all over the planet, they understand, you know, keep people at each other's throats. This group over here gets the wealth for a while, maybe a century or two. Then these people over here, for a couple of centuries, they get the wealth. And these people over here get to eat. And these people over here get to starve to death. And that's the way, you know, we can keep everything in a state of flux, and we can control. What if everything just worked? What if the best minds on the planet worked to build a sustainable, livable planet instead of what we're doing now? We are ending the life of this planet. There is no question about that. We are ending the life of this planet. I don't know if those of us alive will see the end of it. Meanwhile, the religionists are rubbing their hands together. They're happy. The Christians are going, oh, yeah, yeah, that's the whole idea, Mike, you dumbass, yeah. Well, there's a lot of people who don't subscribe to that madness. So instead of ending the life of the planet, you know, with our wars and our competitions and our contempt and our fear of each other and our loathing of each other and our misunderstandings of each other and these political divisions, instead of doing that, why not just... why not just work together? You know, why not just work together? Somebody's going to email me and say, well, it's against human nature. Human nature is kill and eat. and procreate, right? So, and stay out of the rain. That can't be worked with. Human nature is not modifiable. I mean, we can't come to the conclusion now that we're all smart. We're no longer Neanderthals. We're all smart now. We're no longer living in caves, 95% of us. There are some of us among the human tribe that are still living a very primitive hunter-gatherer lifestyle. But, I mean, haven't we got to the point in the evolution of human beings that we can just say, look, we're on this little blue dot. We're hurtling through space at hundreds of thousands of miles an hour. There are three or four directional forces working on us as we hurtle through space. Can't we just figure out that what we're doing is not the thing to do? Okay, never mind. We'll be back after the break. Teabag types out there who are saying, they send me those emails that say, well, I was just flipping through the dial and I caught a little bit of your program. Hi. We know you listen every night. That's okay. That's okay. Kellogg Brown and Root, the company subsidiary or division of Halliburton, which is a division of Dick Cheney, that has been responsible for the deaths of soldiers, private contractors. It is a filthy company. It's been accused of fraud, deception, all sorts of crimes against humanity. Well, KBR, Inc. was selected for a no-bid contract worth as much as $500 million through 2011 for military support services in Iraq. The Army said, yes, well, you're damn right. The Army announced its decision yesterday, only hours after the Justice Department said it will pursue a lawsuit accusing KBR of taking kickbacks from two subcontractors on Iraq-related work. The Army also awarded the work to KBR over objections from members of Congress who have pushed the Pentagon to seek bids for future logistics contracts. The Justice Department said the government will join a suit filed by whistleblowers alleging that two freight forwarding firms gave KBR Transportation Department employees kickbacks. Yada, yada. Yada, yada. KBR, the Army's largest contractor in Iraq, will review the litigation when it is received and, quote, will continue to cooperate with the government, end quote. That's according to company spokeswoman Heather Brown, her again. She said gifts of dinners, baseball tickets, and similar items would not violate KBR policies, and KBR was not aware of these violations. I know I sound like I have just contradicted myself, but pay no attention. KBR will continue to provide services in Iraq such as housing, meals, laundry, showers. Showers! That's where you go if you want to die. You step on the metal platform and then you're electrocuted. Oh, okay. Showers. Water purification. Water purification! That's where you drink the water and you get sick and die, thanks to KBR. Water with scum and crap and disease and worms and garbage, thanks to KBR. Ah, hell yes, hell yes. Water purification, bathroom cleaning. Under the new order, which was placed under a military contract, KBR won in late 2001, shortly after the U.S. invaded Afghanistan. The no-bid work order is unusual because the Army, at the insistence of Congress, has, since April 2008, put all logistics orders to bid, pitting KBR against those other wonderful American corporations, Dyncor International, yeah, and Texas-based Fluor Corp. Yes! The Three Musketeers, those are great American companies. Yes, indeed. The Army didn't put this work out for bids because U.S. commanders in Iraq advised against it, saying that enlisting a new company would be too disruptive as the U.S. withdraws. Yeah, oh, okay, okay, it'll be too disruptive. KBR, Dick Cheney, Halliburton, the gift that keeps on giving, on and on and on and on and on and on. Well, I guess I should share this with you. Epi 10. I don't know if this is a man or a woman. Epi 10. Hey, Malloy! The subject line is, I just got to spew. All right, put on your raincoats. Hey, Malloy! Just another disjointed rant that wanted to get free from my head. It happens every now and then. Convincing rant now. Okay. I like the singing ex-Wall Street rat Dylan Ratigan as much as any utopian socialist like myself, I suppose, can. But today he pissed me off. Oh, this was written yesterday. He was giving his rap to someone on CNN. Actually, it's MSNBC, about the meltdown in Greece, and after ranting about the everyday habits of predatory capitalists, all of which were spot on, he then ruined it all by saying, that is not capitalism. Yes, Dylan, it is. It's the same lame-ass, oft-repeated argument that all religious people aren't crazy. It's just crazy people who are religious that are crazy. Coming from the so-called moderate religious liberals. Sorry, Hartman, Kennedy, Papantonio, I love you guys, but come on. Religion itself, all religion is crazy. Blank, blank, blanking, crazy. Lock the lunatics up and throw away the key, blanking, crazy. I love analogies, so here's one. Religion is like plutonium, and capitalism is the rest of the bomb, complete with delivery system. Capitalism is bad enough on its own. It really is a sick, outdated, hugely dangerous economic philosophy. But it's the plutonium that's the real worry. There's a point to my rant, and it is this. I know I'm a blank, blank, broken record about psychedelics, but let's face it. Humans fear death. And it is the motivating force for everything bad on this planet. If people would do themselves and the world a favor and take one high dose of acid or any of a number of other pharmaceutical tools that are proven to dissolve fear by making you face it, then capitalism and religion would both disappear from this planet overnight. In my opinion, that is the only thing that will open people's eyes quickly enough to disarm this ticking time bomb. Enacting laws to protect humans and animals' rights are very good and much needed things for a functioning society. But unless the fear of death, due, by the way, to religion and religion alone, is eradicated from the human psyche, we humans will ultimately go the way of the dodo. Well, the next in line, the dolphins, maybe that's not such a bad thing. But sadly for humans, the much-needed critical mass awakening on this planet will never happen because the very system of capitalism slash religion that man has invented will not allow it to happen. That seems obvious to me, but again, it's just my opinion. End of rant. Epi 10. Well, I hear you. I hear you, Epi 10. He sent that the other day, and when I read it, I thought, you know, if I don't read this, and all the energy that he obviously put into writing it, I would feel like some kind of a thief, you know, for all the energy put into it. And he transmitted it to me over the internets. And I printed it off and just laid it on a stack somewhere. No, I can't do that. I can't do that. Steven is in Burbank, California, listening on Sirius. Hello, Steven.
Hello, hello, Mike.
How are you?
Well, pretty good, because Sanchez, reading his email, it snapped me out of my contemplation of the obsession contemplating oblivion. And then the email from James kind of said, I kind of made me think, well, you know what? An existentialist would just shrug off a thing like that, like it's less than nothing, you know?
So, yeah, less than nothing. Hey, hold on. I got to do a break, all right?
Okay, bye.
All right, let me put you on hold. We'll come back and pick up your call here in just a minute, because we have to take a break in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 seconds. We'll be right back.
Inner Liberal Warrior with Mike Malloy.
It is about 22 past the hour. Mark is in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that we're no longer represented by the government of this country anymore. It's all corporations now, Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, you get no disagreement from me on that one. I think there are still some members of Congress who would like to change that, but I don't think they're going to be successful.
You know, Mike, it's a tragic day. I mean, I don't know if people really realize how serious this is when, you know, corporate America has, like you say, the stranglehold on us. I mean, we have our, like our pensions, our Social Security, they want it all, Mike. They want it all. And they have the ability to get it now because our politicians are not going to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we no longer have a democracy. It's frightening. The only thing I think we can do, we don't have the money to fight them. All we have is we have numbers. People are going to have to start mobilizing. We're under attack. And it's the people of this country against corporate America. And that's where we're at.
How do you go about launching an attack like that?
I think it might start from the labor movement, but It's got to start there, I believe. That would be one place to start, and start organizing other groups to mobilize against this corporate takeover of our country.
But, you know, back when 30% of the American workforce was part of the labor agreement, which was about 50 years ago, that might have had some effect. You know, you look at what's going on in Greece. There are three major unions there. It's my understanding. I'm not stating that categorically because I'm not that familiar. But it's my understanding there are three major unions. They're the ones that have called these massive strikes. They're not the ones, by the way, that caused the deaths of the three bank employees. That was by a bunch of anarchists who just set the bank on fire. But we don't have that kind of cohesion in this country, A. B, we don't have the union force anymore. I've read something recently that 6 or 7% of the workers in this country are unionized, and about 80% of them are government employees.
Well, we'll need more than just the labor movement, Mike. I mean, I'm just using them as a possibility of spearheading a movement with, of course, we need all the groups. You know, we need, I mean, this is a fight against corporate America, against all the people in this country. And that's what we're looking at here. It's not just one, you know, a labor union fight. It's all our fights. But it's got to start from somewhere. We have to mobilize. We don't have the money. The only way we're going to be able to fight them is with the numbers. And then maybe that's the only way they're going to get it. Because if not, Mike, we're just this middle class, and this country is just going to go down the sewer. And economically, this is just going to be the rich and the very poor.
Well, you know, I still maintain that there is a way to do this. It would be much more effective than fighting the power. And Mark, thank you. I appreciate your call. And that is what I've talked about in this program a couple of times. You've heard other people discuss it. And it's a tried and useful tactic. In this case, I guess it would be a strategic move, but it is to simply stop participating. It's what Mario Savio talked about almost 50, was it that long ago? Back in 63, almost 50 years ago, at the University of UC Berkeley. And that is, you know, at some point, the machine, the monster, becomes so aggressive and so poisonous that, I'm paraphrasing, but you have to literally throw yourself into the gears to make it stop. Now, what's the best way to throw yourself into the gears of capitalism? It certainly is not to fight them, because they already own just about everything. So the way you do it, I honestly believe this, you stop. The whole country. And this is where our lack of cohesion, we're not like Greece. We're not like Spain. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about their economic problems that they didn't ask for, I don't think. I'm not that familiar with it. We are not, we are a very diverse society in our attitudes and in everything about us. So there is not a cohesion in this country. There really isn't. About the only place in the United States that you find cohesion is in the military. But if there were cohesion, if it could be introduced into our collective consciousness, where we would say, wait a goddamn minute, why are we continuing to participate in their method of destroying us? And if we ever got to that point, then the way to fight, the most effective way to fight, is to not fight. It's this passive resistance of just sitting down and drawing pictures, picking up blades of grass until the machine grinds to a halt.
Thank you.
tonight how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. This is on the Reuters news wire this evening. Nearly 40 million Americans receive food stamps. That's a new record. 40 million Americans receive food stamps. The latest in an ever higher string of record enrollment that dates from December 2008 and the U.S. recession. Food stamps are the primary federal anti-hunger program helping poor people buy food. Enrollment is highest during times of economic distress, yada, yada, yada. The Agriculture Department said one in eight Americans were enrolled for food stamps during February. That's February. This is May. Enrollment has set a record each month since reaching 31.7 million in December 2008. U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates enrollment will average 40.5 million people this fiscal year. For fiscal 2011, average enrollment is forecast for 43.3 million. How's that corporate thing doing for you there, huh? How's that corporate-y thingy doing for you? United States of Corporate America, Maggie Mount Shasta says, I love that new name for this country, so it is all very clear that this group in charge of the whole show are totally insane nutcases. Their greed, their out-of-control technologies, and their war games are killing the earth and us. Yet they're too thick to understand that they and their women and children and grandkids will go down with the rest of us. The real question is, how the hell are we going to get the power away from these freaks and stop them before it's too late? Pitchforks and torches? Well, I just support the idea of the total noncompliance with this stuff. Oh, no. Mel is in Los Angeles. Yes, Mel.
Mike, I enjoy your show. I certainly hear some points of view that you don't hear on other stations on the radio.
Uh-huh.
One question I have for you, though, is while there certainly can be no denying that certain corporations and groups of corporations have done some fairly heinous things, what would you replace them with?
Replace the corporations with? I would anything. Break them all up, just like historically in this country, we have broken up massive corporations because they are antithetical to life. And now it's gotten to the point where they are a destructive force for the planet. Sustainable, low impact, low energy, kind of the Jeffersonian model. That's why Jefferson and the founders warned against corporations way back when they were putting the damn country together. They warned against it. Lincoln warned against it. Eisenhower warned against it. By the way, these are mostly Republicans.
Well, but corporations, if you look at them, are people, you know, running a business without, you know, with an independent board of directors.
No, that's
stock is owned.
No,
by,
no, that's
know,
that's absolutely not that's
country.
That's absolutely not true. I don't know where you live, Mel. But independent boards of directors, that's crazy talk. Tell me a corporation that's done good things here recently for the United States or any place on earth. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a consultant for Lockheed Martin.
Lockheed Martin, one of the biggest producers of death and destruction on earth. And you think that's a good corporation?
Yes, I think they've helped.
You do. All right. Well, Mel, obviously you're insane, and I don't want to talk with you because I have a hard time talking with crazy people. Goodbye, Mel. Lockheed Martin. Yeah, let's use that model. That would be a good one. Lockheed Martin. Death purveyor. Destruction. Lockheed Martin that usually destroys whatever area they build one of their death camps in and then moves on without cleaning it up. Go away, Mel. Go back into your rubber bungalow. Put the electrodes back on your temples. Don't call here again. You're insane. Shelley is in Fresno listening on Sirius.
Hi, Mike Malloy. Lockheed, huh?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Think so. You know, these predatory corporate death mongers have finally punched a hole in Starship Earth. I think it might be all the air is going out. I think, you know, I've been through a lot of stuff. In the Bay of Pigs, I've been through the Cold War, and I never thought we were at the brink before. You know, I'm not that kind of a person, but I think we may be there now. I think this roiling black death, don't they know they're going down with us? You know, you're the only one top. Maybe they'll go down last. They're going down. They got another Earth somewhere, like they can pull out of their wherever after this one's gone. They're tethered to this planet. That's why it's evil.
Yeah,
you know,
hey,
you're the only one talking about this.
Hey, Shelley, your call is breaking up horribly. We're getting about every fifth word is dropping out. If you can get to a different cell phone location, give us a call back. We'll put you back on the air because you know I'd like to hear what you have to say, but it's just not coming through. Okay, thanks, Shelley. Maggie says, explain more on how we just stop. Staying home and stopping all by ourselves, no one will notice. Maybe massive but peaceful marches that make teabag rallies seem teeny tiny. Well, they are teeny tiny. Maybe you should have peaceful but humongous marches on Washington, like the days of civil rights, but way bigger. A march coupled with a refusal to participate in anything that corporate America is doing, it wouldn't take long. I mean, how long would it take to where corporate America would say, uh-oh, the natives are growing restless. The natives are reacting. I mean, how long would it take in the perfect situation I'm talking about, which will never happen? I mean, don't get me wrong. This is all utopian nonsense because I know it's not going to happen. We are not Greece. We are not, we don't have a Gandhi. We had a Martin Luther King Jr., but we murdered him. So what, I mean, in the perfect fantasy, all of us consumers, we're not even human beings anymore. We're consumers. That's all. And we don't really consume. We just convert, you know, this idea of consuming, like we get stuff. We don't even consume food. Oh, there's a certain little part of it we convert to energy, but, you know, that we buy all this garbage, this crap, these big boxes of junk and we consume it. No, we don't. We use it and then convert it into junk. It starts as shiny junk and it winds up as scratched and dented junk. I mean, that's all. Come on. So we're not, we've been reduced to consumers, even though that's a misnomer. We are users, but we're not, you know, we're not consumers. But the point is we are not considered to be human any longer. We just aren't. We are. There's a commercial running right now for diabetes, and it's all these different people saying, "I'm not a statistic. I'm not a." You've seen that, Kathy. I'm not a statistic. I'm not a bottom line. I'm not. And I love that commercial. I love to see folks who are in the commercial. I don't know if these are real people or actors, but they are representations of working people. Strictly working people. You don't see anybody in a suit with buff nails. You don't see anybody who lives in a high rise or works on Wall Street. The commercial depicts working people, and they're all saying the same thing. Now, the point is they're talking about diabetes, but it is an incredible commercial. It's very effective in what they're saying. And I wish that commercial could be played into the heads of the ad agency that really wrote it. Never mind. I'm getting too far afield here. But the way to break the machine is simply stop oiling it. I mean, just stop oiling it. It's a massive, murderous, killer machine. And it churns and cranks. And what lubricates it are human bodies. That's all. And that's what Mario Savio was talking about. At some point, when the machine becomes so obnoxious, we've got to throw our bodies into the gears. So, the organization part is the difficult part, you see. I don't think there's anybody in America right now below that top one half of 1% who is truly satisfied with what's going on or optimistic about the future, unless they're mad, unless they're insane, like the jerk that just called me. If you live in a madhouse, well, the whole place is a madhouse, but if you're on leave from a real asylum like that last caller, not the female, but the male, sure, you're happy as a pig in slop, you know. Yeah, hey, I love corporations, man, you betcha. especially Lockheed Martin. Woo! But for the 99.5% of us who are not in that top 0.5%, I don't know how we reach everybody. I don't know how to do it. I have no idea. That's why it's only a fantasy. But that's the only way to stop the machine. The idea of defeating the machine through direct confrontation, fighting it, shooting at it, beating it, setting on a fire. No, of course not. You just have to stop lubricating it. That's all we have to do. It's like any machine. It needs lubricant because there's gears and twisty things and conveyor belts and it's not run. It's not run on silicon chips. It isn't. The machine, the one I'm talking about, is pretty primitive. It could be stopped.
How to Know God, page 130. They brainwashed my great uncle, brainwashed my cousin Bob. They even got my grandma when she was working for the mob. Brainwash you while you're sleeping, while in your traffic jam. Brainwash you while you're weak. No one has this in that
the people who contribute to the program. Haven't done that for a while. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs person. Bruce Enberg is Prairie 2, economic affairs. Kay Petrini is a school teacher who is our education affairs correspondent. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, they're kind of like the public editor at the New York Times. We call them our ethics advisors. The engineer and the executive producer is Kathy Bay, who is not dead, did survive the heart procedure. Stephen is in Burbank, California. Hey, Stephen.
Hello again, Mike. I thought I got lost on the Marge channel and forgotten about or something.
Oh, that's right. You did. Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
No big deal.
The Marge channel.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to listen to the rest of the show.
Yeah. Right.
But when people like Mel ask the question, what are you going to replace it with? A simple answer is the principles of the Constitution.
Yeah.
Democracy, promote the general welfare, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But like my favorite caller, Dave from Chicago, would say, even though he knows it's futile, there might be somebody within earshot who can hear what you're saying and begin to understand mm-hmm. that the corporations are not democracy.
No, they're not. They are. They are the most clear example of a Soviet style Politburo that I've ever come across. I mean, you have a ruling group that would be the board of directors. They decide who the premier is going to be, or the CEO, the CFO, and so on and so forth. And the so-called shareholders or stockholders, whatever. They convince themselves they have a vote, but they really don't, any more than the poor bastards in the old Soviet Union. They got the vote too, but it doesn't mean anything. So when people talk to me about corporations running the country, I know that I'm listening to a Stalinist.
For sure. Power mongers and control freaks. It's the same difference.
Yeah.
They think they're smarter, and but guess what? They're not. Look what happened in the Gulf. That is not smarter than us.
No, it's not. And corporations will forever. They talk about the government overspending, and I agree that there are a lot of areas where there's probably an awful lot of waste and fraud and graft, like contracts that go to Kellogg Brown and Root. But government does overspend, but government doesn't deliberately underspend And as a result of the underspending, like in the case of BP, people die and planets get polluted and crapped on. So your example is the one I would go with, what the framers of this Constitution originally had in mind, except for that little bit about genocide, slavery, and women don't count.
Exactly. And that's why they have Article 5 in the main body, and it's called the Constitutional Convention. That means everybody gets together and says, we don't want to live like this anymore. There are better ways to live, and this isn't it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Because it's all about oil, and that's their oil, their power, and they use it to move everything around and take joy and delight in all this death and destruction. The number one consumption area of fossil fuels right now in the world are the military operations in
Sure.
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Number two on the list is my 6.5 Buick.
What?
Number two on the list
is your 65 Buick. Oh, my God.
That is a lot. But you know what? I try to limit it. You know, I burn maybe 4 or 5 gallons a month. You know? I have a bicycle.
Well, that's good.
I have feet, you know?
At least you're being responsible with a 65 Buick. All right.
I am, too.
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome.
Have a good weekend. Take care. You know, every once in a while, I'm sure at some point, you think, I'm not talking about you conservatives, you're all nuts and crazy and disgusting. But normal people, I'm sure that every once in a while normal people think, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. And I don't care how much money you're making, unless you're in that billionaire class. And even then, it doesn't make any difference how much money you're making. It's how you're enjoying your life, how you're really enjoying your life on an essential level, on a real fundamental level, on a level where you can feel or one can feel joy. I would like to take a survey sometime and ask people, when's the last time you felt any joy? I mean joy. Really felt good without chemical enhancement to get you there. I mean just really out of what you were experiencing. And I'm sure people say, well, last Thursday or a year and a half ago or 10 minutes ago. Okay, how long were you able to sustain it? Most people who tell you that they feel some joy, it's very brief, episodic. It's just, you know, like, I don't know, their kid takes the first steps or says first words. And sure, you feel joy. How long does that last? You know. But what if there were a way to feel joyful and happy and content your entire life? See, I maintain there is a way to do that. I don't know what it is, but it just seems to me that part of that has to do with ending all the divisiveness, ending, you know, what's Mississippi, what's China, you know, what... And just ending it and you know, working together to reach a state of joy. Joyfulness. Huh? Oh, yeah, you're going to find it in Christianity? In a pig's ass. Oh, Islam? No, I don't think. Oh, studying very hard and davening as a Jew? No, I don't think so. All this crazy stuff from the Hindus? No, not that either. Oh, never mind. Listen, have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. Whether you're really a mother or, you know, a mother. I'll see you Monday night. All right, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, and happy Mother's Day to you, too. Wherever you are!